This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Andre Benjamin, a.k.a. Andre 3000, is half of the duo Outkast. The New York Times recently described Outkast as the biggest-selling and most critically adored hip-hop act of the last decade. Their album Speakerbox, The Love Below, which included the hit Hey Ya, sold 11 million copies and won 3 Grammys. Andre and his Outkast partner, Antoine Patton, a.k.a. Big Boy, work on songs together and on their own. This year they made the movie musical Idlewild. This is a song from it. There's an exuberance and sense of fun in a lot of Andre's music, and even in the way he dresses, which ranges from elegant to outrageous. Esquire named him the world's best-dressed man. A few years ago, Andre crossed over to acting. In addition to Idlewild, he's appeared in the films Be Cool and Four Brothers. Now Andre has co-created a new animated series for the Cartoon Network called Class of 3000. He writes the music for the show and also does the voice of the main character, Sonny Bridges, a music star who's won 27 Grammys plus a Nobel Peace Prize, but decides to give up the spotlight. Students at the performing arts school that he went to ask him to come back and be their music teacher. Here's a clip from the intro to the series.
We ain't got no music teacher. Now what do we do? So, Sonny, since you want to lay low, how about being our music teacher over at Westwood?
Y'all need a music teacher?
Yeah!
When I saw Lil D playing my old beat machine, I saw myself. And I knew then that's why I walked off stage in Japan. I stopped having fun. So here's the deal. If y'all will let me hang out here for a little while, and you promise to bring the fun, I will show you how to put the K on.
K-fun?
No, funk. Y'all got a lot to learn. And I'm just the man to teach it to you.
Andre Benjamin, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me start by asking you to explain, to describe your character in Class of 3000.
My character, I voice, he's an entertainer, you know, a musical superstar. And at the top of his career, he stops completely, just he walks off a stage and the world is looking for him. And he goes back to his hometown, to Atlanta, Georgia, and he becomes a school teacher. And so that's the voice, that's the character that I voice, and his name is Sonny Bridges. And I know we were talking about, you were saying that Sonny Rollins was on the show before, and I think that's a good thing that we can get into, because actually Sonny Bridges' name was inspired by Sonny Rollins, because, you know, the jazz legend that, you know, he stopped playing at one point in time in his career, and the legend was he moved to San Francisco and would only play under a bridge. So, hence the name Sonny Bridges.
Right. What happened with Sonny Rollins is he used to, from around 1959 to 61, he wasn't recording, but he was performing. He was rehearsing a lot on a bridge, the Williamsburg Bridge in New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So,
but that's that legend. You know, I've read 3 different stories. You know, and I just thought it was funny. You know, because at this point in my career. As Andre 3000, you know, I hadn't toured in about 3 years, and it's just because I've gotten bored with doing it and, you know, just trying to find new things to do. And so it was funny that after I did it and I read about Sonny Rollins, I said, hey, oh, that's cool. And, you know, I made the character up. And so he comes back to Atlanta and he's the school teacher to these 5 or 6, like, crazy musically gifted kids. And they have to play themselves out of episodes. They have to play themselves out of trouble. And Lil D, he's the ringleader of the crew, and he's kind of like a little version of me when we were creating the show and creating the characters. My partner, Tommy Lynch, you know, I would tell him stories of, you know, growing up, and he said, hey, that's it, you know, that's one of the characters, that's Lil D. And so when you see Lil D, it's kind of like a little version of me.
Now, you said the character's name is inspired by Sonny Rollins. Your goatee isn't inspired by Sonny Rollins' goatee, is it?
No. No, not at all. Not at all. That's just, I don't know. It took me a long time to even get hair on my face. So once I got it, I was like, I'm never cutting it.
No,
you know, so just let it go.
You're writing the music for each episode of this new Cartoon Network series. And some of the songs are, you know, they're contextual. They're written for the story. So what's an example of the kind of thing you're writing for the Cartoon Network series that you wouldn't have been writing otherwise? Like, there wouldn't have been an occasion to write a song like that without this story, this plot?
Well, it's funny. It's because it's kind of like a mixture. I mean, some of the songs are borderline. They could be songs that are just on the radio that have nothing to do with a cartoon. That's why I wanted to make sure, like, when we were writing these songs, they weren't, like, cartoony type songs. But at the same time, I'm writing for kids. So when I'm writing, it's not totally Andre 3000 where I could say what I want to say. I have to write through that character. And I did some of the same thing on Idlewild as well. It's kind of like I had the character Percival. And I had to write through his eyes. You know, because you do have, a frame, you know, I guess an outcast. Sometimes we just go in and we go for broke and we just have, you know, no frames, no limitations. We do and say what we want to do. With the cartoon, I mean, I have a certain audience in mind and certain characters in mind, so I have to speak through them. So it's really their voice. But musically, the actual sounds, it can go anywhere.
So what connections do you feel between you and the character that you play in Class of 3000? You know, he's left the music industry to teach.
Right, right. There's a lot of similarities. And this rap thing is kind of like, it really is a young man's game. And being that I'm 31 now, I mean, which is still young in the game, I still have to think about the future. So I'm like, man, I don't want to be 45 years old, you know, 50 years old out here trying to rap. You know, because it really is about the young people. So I always thought, well, it would be cool if I could go back to school and to become a teacher, because those were like some of my greatest memories in high school was like my art teacher. So even though I didn't think I'd be a music teacher if I left the game, I did think I want to teach art. And I hadn't left music or anything, but I am feeling a certain shift. You know, I've been doing it for 13 years and I'm always looking for new inspiration. And just so happened, you know, Cartoon Network, they contacted me and said, hey, we have this idea, you know, and we have, we want you to do this animated show.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Andre Benjamin. He's half of the group Outkast. He's also an actor. His latest movie is Idlewild. Now he has a new Cartoon Network series, which is called Class of 3000. He co-created it. And one of the characters is based on him, and he does the voice of that character. Now, you said you wanted to, like, branch out from rapping because rapping's a young man's game, and one of the things you've been doing lately is acting. And you starred along with Big Boy Andre Patton from Outkast. You starred in the film Idlewild, which is set in a Georgia speakeasy, you know, during Prohibition, and you're the piano player at the speakeasy. Mm-hmm. And even though it's the kind of speakeasy at which fights are constantly breaking out, the production numbers in it are as lavish as if it were the Cotton Club of Harlem.
Thank you.
And I thought we could hear, before we talk more about the movie, I thought we could hear the song that in the movie is the production number that plays at the very end of the film behind the closed credit music.
And Rooster.
And you're at the piano in this at the start in a beautiful, like, tuxedo, and then you leave the piano to, like, sing and dance, and there are a scantily clad chorus line of dancers behind you, and there's stairways with dancers going up and down the stairs like in the old production numbers.
Yeah.
So this is a fantastic song. Well, let's hear it, and then we'll talk.
Don't feel like that, no.
That's Andre Benjamin from the film Idlewild. Is this the kind of song that you would have written yourself if it wasn't for this movie?
Yes and no. Believe it or not, that song is about 6 years old.
Really?
And yeah, originally it was a guitar-based song, and it was kind of just me and the beat playing a guitar. And I had some of the lyrics even 5 years ago, and when we were doing this movie, I thought it worked perfectly. And so I had to change the production a little bit and make it more piano-based, because electric guitars, I mean, they were invented back then, but they weren't really where they are now. And I added a second and third verse, and Big Boy, you know, came on and put his thing on and make it what it is now. So, yes, I mean, even the lyric, you know, ain't nobody like my style. You know, I like my fire. They blow it out. You know, that was something that Andre 3000 was actually feeling, you know, 5 years ago before the movie came about. So it just so happened that when the movie came around, Percival was going through the same thing that Andre 3000 was going through. So it made total sense. And just the singing style was different, because the way I sang it before, it wouldn't work for 1930. So, you know, by listening to a lot of Cab Calloway things, you know, it was like big voice, big throat, like huge production, horns, you know. And so I just made it into what it is now.
I love the way you talk about Andre 3000 as if he were a person that you knew, you know.
Well, I know him sometimes. You know,
he's your persona for the band Outkast. So how do you see Andre 3000 as compared to yourself, Andre Benjamin?
I guess if you can imagine, like if you're a kid and you're in the mirror and you're playing dress up and you're this other character, and as soon as your mom walks in, you change back into that person. And so Andre Benjamin was the kid that sat there and said, hey, what can I play? And he's in the mirror and he's putting on his cowboy and Indian suit. Once he puts on his outfits, once he starts to play and get into his kind of fun head, he's Andre 3000. You know, so Andre 3000 is that character within Outkast that kind of just goes there and has a ball, you know, does his thing. Andre Benjamin is, you know, the person that goes to Whole Foods, you know, that goes to the mall, you know, goes to the dry cleaners, you know, pumps gas, you know. That's my mama name. My mama gave me that name, Andre Lauren Benjamin.
And where does the 3000 come from?
Around 1999, right before it was, you know, about to turn into 2000, you know, the whole world was going crazy. Oh, man, my computers are going to change over, and we're all going to die, and, you know, everything's going to go kaput. And so 3000 actually means the year 3000, you know, the 3000 AD, kind of to look ahead and to keep myself excited. So the 3000 was tacked on to Andre, because I have a kind of like a personality where I get bored really fast, so I have to find stuff to keep myself interested. And that's where the cowboys and Indians come in.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Andre Benjamin in the group Outkast. He's Andre 3000. And he also has a new series that's on the Cartoon Network called Class of 3000. And it's about a music star who leaves the world of music to teach kids about music.
And life.
And life, yes.
Yeah, through music.
Now, you know, the music that you wrote for Idlewild, or that you changed for Idlewild, draws on music, a lot of different kinds of music, you know, like funk and hip-hop, but also early jazz. Did working on that movie expose you to music that you otherwise might not have listened to?
Of course. You know, growing up, I mean, I've always, you know, heard 30s or 40s music, but it was always, you know, and some other picture. It was always kind of like background music. Like, I can't say that I just ride around listening to 1930s, 40s music. I think the quality in the production, you know, is kind of different from what I'm used to right now. So when preparing for the role for Percival in Idlewild, I had to go meet morticians. You know, I had to go to funeral homes to actually see how these people live.
He plays a mortician, that's why.
Yeah. Yes. I play a mortician in Idlewild, so in preparing for the role, I had to go talk to morticians and had to sit down and ask them about their life, ask them about how women treat them once they find out, you know, they're mortician. And I also had to get into the time frame of what was going on. So I watched a couple of movies from, you know, the 30s, 40s era, you know, things like Casablanca, a lot of Bugsy Berkeley movies, stormy weather, and, you know, things of that nature. And I listen to a lot of music, and mainly Cab Calloway. And it's funny because if you listen to Cab Calloway's music, he was actually rapping back in those times. But the sound, you know, the big band sound, is I was introduced to it by the movie because I was never into it. So just to hear that kind of instrumentation, even though in Outkast music I've been producing songs that had, you know, horns before and, you know, those sounds, I mean, it's the arrangements, you know. So it's the horn blast and it's the way that the parts are written that are different. So so every song wasn't like this huge big band song. I mean, some of them had beats to them, you know, some of them had, I guess the stylings were kind of a funky version of 1930s.
Now, you're a character who is this kind of shy piano player at the speakeasy. Says about having to play there when he's forced into the spotlight during mm-hmm. one scene. He says, "I hate the spotlight." And I can't imagine you ever saying you hate the spotlight. You seem to just love performing so much and seem to have these kind of like old-style show business values of loving to like sing and dance with costumes.
That's where the Cowboys and Indians come in.
Right.
Once again.
Yeah.
It's funny because when Brian Barber, who's the director and writer of Idlewild,
and who also directed your Hey video,
right, and Roses and a couple of others, but you know, I've known Brian since he was in film school in Atlanta at Clark, and you know, he'd come to parties and, you know, he'd say, "Hey man, I want you to be in my movie," and this is when we first came out, and he'd say, "Hey, I want you in this movie. Check out this script, or, you know, let's get together and just, you know, let's come up with some ideas or whatever." So Brian has known me for a long time. He's known me. He's known Big Boy for a long time. So when we were putting this movie together, he knows our personalities that a lot of people don't know, you know. And it's funny you say that I seem like, okay, I love to jump on stage and I love to, you know, do the whole Hollywood. I love to sing and love to dance and love the spotlight and love to pose. And that's kind of not true. You know, it's kind of, I started doing music because I like to do it and I didn't know what I was getting into. So when he says, you know, I'm forced into a situation, I'm not really forced into it, but I kind of painted myself into a corner where I have to do it. But I do like to do music. But a lot of things that come along with it, you know, I'm not really a fan of. I just like to do great work. I like to create stuff. So it be it music, film, whatever, you know, if the end product is good, you know, I'm loving it.
I want to play something from the soundtrack of Idlewild, and this is an interlude.
Ah, yes. Well, I myself, Larry Olivier, I'm a method actor, and I studied at the prestigious school of Juilliard. And, you know, I feel as if, you know, the rappers and the musicians and whatnot getting into acting, you know, they're disrespecting the craft. I feel as if, you know, they're taking jobs from us trained actors, and I feel as if they should just leave it to the pros.
So, Andre Benjamin, is that an example of the reaction that you got when you started to act? Oh, what's this rapper doing acting?
Yeah, but you never hear it from the actors, you know, because they don't come, you know, straight out and come to your face and say it. They kind of go a roundabout way. I mean, certain actors have come out to say, you know, how they feel about, I guess, music stars getting into film. I mean, that's their opinion. But I just wanted to kind of make something clear, you know, because, you know, when I'm getting interviewed for a film, and, you know, and the writer asked me, well, okay, well, this actor said something about this. And my thing is, okay, you know, I do understand, you know, you're a trained actor or you take this craft seriously, but I do too, you know. And my thing is, like, who are you to say, you know, don't do this, you know. So if you're an actor and then one day you pick up a guitar and you make up a great song and you happen to record it and then they play it on the radio, am I not to listen to it? You know, because you're supposed to be an actor. So why are you picking up a guitar? And I think that's the wrong attitude to have. So if you're an actor, I mean, I'm really like, man, you can go head on with that because I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You do what you do. And if you don't like my work, I mean, that's fine. You know, I know I have a long way to go. You know, I know I'm not like Jeffrey Wright or, you know, Denzel at this point, you know, but I do take it seriously and I do think I do have something to bring. And I do feel like I will get better. You know, so stay tuned.
One of the things that you have to learn as an actor is how to project vulnerability, because there are roles you're going to play in which you're vulnerable. And that's certainly the case in some scenes in Idlewild, for example. And vulnerability is in some ways exactly the kind of thing that a lot of rappers try to not express. Rappers on the whole, I mean, I think a lot of rappers try to maintain a very tough and hardened persona.
Right.
So I'm wondering, was there a transition for you of exposing more vulnerability both in your music and in your acting?
Yeah. I think, not just in rap, in life, period. When I started off, we were just, straight street rappers, and I do understand where it comes from. A lot of actors have a lot of music guys or rappers have a hard time, getting rid of this character that they've built up, their whole career. And I don't think it's a thing of, them pretending or trying to be hard to put on. But it's like the street life, it won't allow you to show, that soft side, because, you'll get trampled, just in the street. And so you have to kind of toughen up or man up in a certain kind of way. And if you've built your whole career on letting people know, that I don't play, and you have to get into a character that does play or that does let other emotions come out, that may be a hard step. But even before I started doing film, in life, I knew I had to take my music other places, because once again, I got bored with doing the same thing. So I got deeper and deeper into my music. And when I got deeper and deeper into my music, I had to expose certain sides of myself. And even when you look at Speaker Box and the Love Below was just that. That was the meaning of the Love Below. Like on the top of a man, you have this kind of hard shell or this kind of, I'm tough and nothing can hurt me. But the love below is those feelings that every man feels when he goes home, and he thinks about these things, and he thinks about his life, he thinks about his woman, he thinks about his kid. And there's no room to be tough there, so that's what the love below is about. So when it came time to act, it wasn't that much of a step, because I knew that you have to be an actor. You can't act. That's the key. Once you act, people can see you acting. And that's not good, I talked to Mark Wahlberg, who kind of, I think he's done the transition the best, where people actually consider him more an actor than a music guy, and he said, man, I had to, and he's from the hardest parts of Boston, and he said, man, I had to make a point where I was like, man, am I going to put on for my homeboys in the neighborhood, or am I going to go out here and just do what I have to do?
Well, okay, so you were saying that, in your CD, The Love Below, that means the person beneath the tough veneer and the emotions beyond that tough exterior.
Right.
So let me play, the really big hit from this, which is Hey Ya, your song. And, this song is, so much fun. And I guess fun is one of the things that would not be good if you're trying to have that really tough exterior. Yes?
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because in the Hey Ya video, I had a lot of fun doing it, and you can see a lot of smiles, And I got a lot of feedback from just that alone, a lot of DJs and a lot of people on the street. They were like, man, that's cool, but I ain't seen a rapper smile in a long time, And I think smiling is powerful. Come on, God gave you teeth, he gave you lips, he gave you emotions. Come on, smile now. You ain't tough 24/7. That's just not true. If you want to keep it real. Now, that's keeping it real.
Well, before we hear Hey Ya, would you just talk a little bit about putting this together, writing the song? You play all of the instruments except bass on it, I think.
Right.
So can you talk about conceiving the record and, conceiving the song and then the music happening behind the song?
With Hey Ya, that song was 3 years old before the public heard it. So a lot of times, I'll start a song, just a rough idea, and I'll move on to something else. And the song is just not ready for the people at the time. Sometimes it takes, just that time to incubate or whatever. And so when I was working on The Love Below, I had a theme in my head, It was about love. It was about emotion. So even when people are listening to Hey Ya and dancing around and, they think it's crazy and they think it's fun, if you really pay attention to the lyrics, it's really a pretty dark song, you know. So it has that kind of, I guess you, what do you call it, that dichotomy, that kind of is dark on one end and it's light on the other end. But when putting it together, it was pretty much just me at home with my guitar, and I was playing these chords over and over and over again. I'm not a great guitar player, so these were some of the first chords that I ever learned. And, you know, during that time, you know, I was into a lot of garage, a lot of punk music, and I was just going for it. And so this was my interpretation of what I thought those sounds were. And the lyrics, usually they start from me messing around on my guitar playing, and I'll just start to kind of baby talk lyrics, you know, and I usually record myself on a micro cassette recorder. And so, you know, I'll be, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, 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 you know, and then I'll listen to it back and damn near translate what I'm saying, you know, like I almost have to decode my Yippity app, and that's what comes out, you know, my baby don't mess around because she loves me so, you know, and that's what came out, and it just starts to make sense after a while. And then I came back 3 years later working on the Speaker Box Love Below album and came back with the second verse. And then the, you know, Polaroid part, you know, that was kind of just a freestyle, actually, in the studio. And Beyonce's video was on the screen when I was doing the song. I forget which video it was, but I thought it was an amazing video, and she was showing plenty of attitude. And so that's how she crept her way into the song, you know, when it says, now Beyonce's and Lucy Liu's, those were actually commercials or scenes that were on the TV when I was in the vocal booth. And they crept their way into the song.
So you're describing how you speak in almost, you know, like baby talk when you're first writing
right.
The melody for the song. Is the hey ya part of the original baby talk?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Yes. And that's probably why it's hey ya, because I really didn't have any words, so you just, hey, yeah, you know.
Well, it works, doesn't it?
and then you fine-tune it, and you know it's saying, hey, yeah. It's kind of like really listening to another language, and then you listen back to it and say, oh, okay, now what is he saying? What is he saying? And then you make it out. You know, you've been a translator, and that's what happens. A lot of people get the song mistaken. They say, oh, man, I love that Hey Now song. Like, well, it's hey, yeah.
Well, here it is. And this is Andre Benjamin from the Outkast album Speaker Box, The Love Below.
1, 2, 3, My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure.
That's Andre Benjamin, a.k.a. Andre 3000 from Outkast, and that was a really, really big hit. You were saying before that your persona, Andre 3000, is the person who you would be when you were a kid playing cowboys and Indians after you got into the clothes and were impersonating the cowboys and Indians. When you performed Hey Ya at the Grammys, It actually was a kind of Indian set. I mean, there were, you know, like teepees and, you know, everybody was dressed as Indians with like paint and feathers and everything. And some Native Americans took offense at that. And CBS actually had to offer an apology. And so I was just wondering if the whole kind of like Native American setting for that song gets back to what you were saying before about playing cowboys and Indians when you were a kid.
Maybe, you know, maybe subliminally, you know, it came through. And I'm sorry that that happened, you know, that it came out that way. And there was really no disrespect at all. And I hate that the Native American community, you know, that, you know, they took it like that. And, you know, and I gave my apology for sure. But, I mean, Native American sounds or, I mean, dress and influence, I mean, has been and still will continue to be, you know, a part of my music. And, I mean, if I had to do it all over again, I probably would do it again. You know, there's no disrespect. I mean, there's Native American in my family as well. So, I mean, I can't say that it was, you know, done to, I guess, buffoon, you know, any kind of Native American culture or anything. It was just influence. You know, I think people take styles and make them into dress a lot of times, you know, and I think, I mean, it may have made a couple of people mad, but it was never that, you know, the Native American, you know, community. I mean, I see them as strong, you know, and they have plenty style.
So what inspired you to do it? Was it the style? Is that what inspired you?
Yeah, it was totally the style. When I was talking to the Grammy committee, putting it together, you know, I knew that I wanted it to have a Native American feel. I wanted it to be futuristic, but at the same time, to have some kind of earthly ground to it. And even the teepee on stage, I mean, that was a spaceship, you know, shaped like a teepee, you know, that came down. And we were supposed to be, you know, these otherworldly Native American tribesmen that came back, you know, to give music again. So, you know, I'm sad that it went that way.
We were talking before about how, as a rapper, a lot of people have a very kind of tough image and that you kind of have to if you live in tough neighborhoods. Otherwise, people are going to take advantage of you. One of the things that you do is you design clothes. Mm-hmm. And you wear a lot of very kind of extravagant theatrical clothes, you know, on stage and in videos, in movies. And I'm wondering how that fits in with, like, the tough exterior that you needed to have when you were growing up. Did you wear theatrical clothes when you were young, or is that an indulgence you couldn't afford because it would have been too weird?
Well, no, actually, in high school, I mean, it was still a lot about style. Like in Atlanta, it was called, you know, being a prep. And when you're a prep, it's kind of like, it was like a clothes culture. And we were considered what you would call like low heads. And this was, even though, you know, Ralph Lauren, I think he started in 67, he was kind of like the general of this whole stylesman, you know, thing. And as a kid, you know, that's all we wanted to be. We wanted to look like, you know, we wanted to look like we had it, look like we went to college. And so everybody, we were into clothes and we did certain things with them, like in our own funky kind of way. Like we would take pants and we would dye them different colors, or we'd wear, you know, two or three different color polo shirts on top of each other just so we can have color combinations and all this type of stuff. So it was a real style thing. So that's always been in me. But I think people get the stage antics and the stage wear, I think, mixed up with streetwear. You know, when you're on stage, you know, you wear the white wigs, or you wear, you know, these Indian, you know, no shirt and, you know, huge furry pants or whatever. I mean, but those are not things that happen on the street, though, you know. So to answer your question, they don't fit in. You know, that doesn't fit in with it. But at the same time, the attitude that you do it with, you know, some of the hardest people on the street, you know, they come up to me and be like, man, you know, I love what you do. And I think it comes from the attitude of what you're wearing, not actually what you're wearing, you know. And it's kind of like your own thing. And that's gangster. You know, gangster doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean you're this Chicago gangster, you know, of the 40s. But gangster meaning doing what you want to do.
So are you saying,
you
know, you have
making
to,
your own rules?
Are you saying you have to be like macho enough to be able to not dress macho?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a form of trickery. You know, but I mean, they respect it. And it's kind of like after a while, you would start to see people in the hood, you know, you would see them wear a turban, you know, and they still be in the hood doing their thing, you know. So I think it just comes from the attitude. And then, but I think you just have to separate the two, though. You can't, I don't think if I walk down the street with a white wig on, you know, I don't think that would work.
Now, you grew up near Atlanta, or in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. In Atlanta.
Okay.
Yeah, Southwest Atlanta, Georgia, Bankhead, then moved to Decatur, Southwest DeKalb, yeah.
Now, you were brought up when you were young by your mother. I think your father mm-hmm. and mother split before you were born. And I read your mother worked at a fast food chicken place.
Oh, yeah. She worked at Miss Winner's. She's had a lot of jobs. She's worked at Miss Winner's. She's worked for the Atlanta Public School System.
Uh-huh.
She's been a manicurist doing nails and pedicures, you know.
Uh-huh.
She's worked at General Motors on the assembly line building cars before they shut down the plants, you know, here. So she's had a lot of jobs, you know.
Do you think your mother working at a beauty salon for a while affected at all your interest in design and color and all that?
No, actually not. I think it was me drawing and painting because before I even started Outkast, you know, I drew and I painted and, you know, I get letters from, you know, colleges wanting me to come to school to do art. And that was my love, like since I've been a baby. That's all I've been doing is drawing. So I actually thought my career would go a whole nother way than what it is now. But I still think I think it bleeds through in music because I'm so visual, you know, and I kind of see things even when I'm writing or when I'm listening to a song. I can see a video, you know, or images as I'm going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the beauty shop had a lot to do with that. I actually didn't like to go up there that much. Only reason why I like to go up to the beauty shop because people are always talking. You know, and you always hear kind of like the gossip, what's going on. There was always beautiful ladies coming through. So that was kind of like the best thing at a beauty shop.
Now, I read two things about your schooling. One was that you went to a performing arts high school, a magnet school. And the other is the one you went to a school for kids who were in trouble. So is either or both of those true?
Yep, that is true. I went to Sutton Middle School, and that I tried out for the drama troupe. And we put on stage plays in middle school. And then I went to high school at Tri-Cities, which was a performing arts school. And that's where I met Big Boy. And they had the drama class. And, you know, they had all these extra classes that were fun, you know, fun classes. But when I got to high school, that's when I made the transition from living with my mom to living with my dad. And my dad, you know, he's never had me, you know, wholly. Where he's kind of like the only protector, the only person in the house. So I was kind of mischievous and I pretend like I was going to school, but I actually wasn't going. And so I got kicked out of normal school and they sent me to an alternative school. And that's where it's a school where people that are not doing the things they're supposed to be doing go. And you have, like, you know, girls that are pregnant, you know, people that get in trouble a lot. And it was kind of like a college campus because, you know, they really didn't care about you. They didn't care if you went to school or not. You know, they, at that point, they were like, well, if you're bad enough not to do what you're supposed to be doing, we don't care either. And so you had to kind of make a decision to get it at that point. And so, yeah, both of those things are true. So it's kind of like I got influences from both sides. You know, you go to a performing arts school and you're doing this drama thing and you're doing music and you're doing talent shows. But then on the other end, you know, you're at the school where it's fights and, you know, it's pregnant girls and it's people carrying pistols and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, kind of crazy, but I mean, I guess that's all in what makes you, you know, your experiences make you that person.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about how you have these different personas. Did you have different personas for the performing arts school and a different one for the school with all, you know, like the tough kids carrying pistols and stuff? I mean, did you have to be a different person in each of those schools?
No, not at all. It was kind of crazy. It was like a culture clash because, I mean, I was living in, you know, I guess what you would call the lower housing part of Atlanta, you know, off of Bankhead. And my mom was smart enough to send me to a school in Buckhead, which is kind of like the best part of Atlanta or like the rich part of town where, you know, I was going to school with kind of like the mayor's kids and, you know, the commissioner's son and, you know, I guess the affluent of Atlanta. And it's funny because we all got along in a cool kind of way and it was different experiences. So I'm coming home, you know, and I'm listening to Too Short and Kilo and N.W.A. and Eric B. and Rakim. Then I get to school and I'm listening to NXS and Depeche Mode, you know, you know, that type of thing, you know, Duran Duran, you know, Bad Brains and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's cool because I think any kid, I think you need to get out of where you are all the time. I think traveling and knowing different cultures or knowing, mm-hmm. you know, different parts of life, I think it helps you. I mean, because you become more. I mean, if you're in the hood 24/7, that's all you know. And I mean, people can't really blame you because that's all you know. So that's what you're going to come out like. But if you travel the world or if you go to a different part of town or like, okay, like I'm leaving the hood and I'm going to my school and like one of my best friends was Andre, you know, his family, they're from France. So I'm spending the night over their house and, you know, speaking French and they showing me all this type of different kind of food. And I had another homeboy named Ashok Shaw, you know, his family was East Indian, you know, so I'm going over to their house and I'm in their prayer circles and, you know, we're doing things I wouldn't normally do at home. So I'm getting to see other parts of life, you know, which is cool, you know.
You're a father. You have a son who's like 9 or something now. Is that about right?
Yep. He'll be 9 November 18th.
And his mother is Erykah Badu, the singer. And you separated a while ago. And there's you've said that you gave up drugs and drinking and all that when, mm-hmm. when you were about to become a father and never looked back on that. You have a song, one of the really popular Outkast songs called Sorry Miss Jackson, mm-hmm. which I believe is dedicated to your son's maternal grandmother.
Right.
Can you talk about writing the song and why you want, like, what message you wanted to send her and why?
Well, let me just go back a little bit. I actually stopped drinking and smoking and all that type of stuff years before. I had a child and years before I even met Erykah. So it was kind of like a life decision because I was kind of just going too hard and too fast, you know, with the beginnings of Outkast. But the song Miss Jackson, like I've always heard songs about, you know, baby mama songs, but I thought it would be cool to do a song about how a baby's mama felt about you, because you always wonder, you know, does her mom like me, you know, or man, how does she feel, you know, that I've come into her daughter's life and then I'm not there anymore. And so, I mean, that was the approach of the song, and that started as one of those kind of songs at home. It started as a guitar based song, you kind of just playing these chords at home, and then I was in the studio working on the track with the had a beat going, and I started playing these chords on the keyboard, and I started singing the lyrics that I had at home to this beat, and it worked perfectly. So it was kind of like melting the two together.
Did you actually apologize to your son's mother's mother for the pregnancy?
Well, no, I didn't. I really didn't. I mean, I don't know if it was one. I can't say if it was one deserved or not, but I mean, we make a joke about it now. You know, when I see a mom, you know, when the song was out, she would say, "You owe me publishing, you know, for this song, you know." But no, it wasn't like a formal, "Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Wright." Her name is Miss Wright, but I thought Miss Jackson, the syllable sounded better. And I thought people knew more Jacksons than Wrights. So.
Well, Andre Benjamin, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Andre Benjamin, a.k.a. Andre 3000, is half of the hip-hop duo Outkast. The Outkast movie musical Idlewild will be out on DVD in December. Andre's new Cartoon Network series, Class of 3000, premieres Friday, November 3rd.